Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning. We thought you had been enjoying this show, and so we wanted to switch it up on you. And
audience pruning.
We've invited Sean from Elmwood Park.
No, God!
To sit in this morning. Yeah, that was my reaction too. Sean from Elmwood Park, welcome. Let's start with the impact of Hurricane Michael. This is particularly salient to you since
my entire career is built around Florida.
Right. Yeah. And you're, and I think you see yourself in the future, in the near term, not too distant future in Florida.
By the time Pritzker's sworn in, I'll be there, baby.
All right.
My wife and kids will be here, but that's all right.
So the reports are a couple of people were killed, and the devastation, not surprisingly, when it makes landfall and 155-mile-an-hour winds, devastation pretty substantial in the Panama Beach, Mexico Beach area.
Yeah, and Mexico Beach is a beach where I have actually slept on.
Keep going.
Well, when I first opened up 3 years ago, I realized that Destin, Florida is a beautiful, beautiful spot. It really is. And I wanted to talk to somebody about having a presence in Destin. And I went on a holiday weekend. And one thing about Destin is it is a tourist hub. And big mistake not to make sure there were hotel rooms available, you know, when I went for my meeting. Mm-hmm. So I arrived in Mexico City as a vagrant. And, yeah, the alternative was sleep in the rent-a-car or, you know, go on the lawn chair and on the beach.
Must bring back memories.
I'll tell you what, it was wonderful. Right. Wonderful. So I have a vested interest in case I ever am homeless. I want to sleep on Mexico Beach again, and it's been devastated by the hurricane.
Well, I mean, seriously, not to be funny about the hurricane, but you keep track of what happens in Florida because there's so many Chicago area transplants living down there now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing to see, and in particular along the Gulf Coast, where a lot of Illinoisans tend to end up. So, yeah, it's devastating. But they'll bounce back. And the reality is they're set for this. And when you really look at the kind of devastation that's there, they're already mobilizing to restore electricity. And there's all kinds of – I think this is good. They're going to handle this.
And North Carolina, South Carolina getting hit again as they did with the previous hurricane, not to the extent of the panhandle, but they're getting hit again. So there's preparation in those states for that. And I like the fact that the Cajun Navy is back on the job.
Sure. Sure. And there's going to be deals to be had after this. You know, you must always look at the positive.
Sure, right.
You'll be buying this stuff pennies on the dollars if you're smart.
Right. You look at everything through the real estate prism.
Well, let's just take there's an opportunity somewhere, you know. And the demolition's been done. So a lot of cleared out beachfront property.
Right. You know, I guess this is sort of like the old saw in golf, like every shot makes somebody happy.
It's exactly
so
right.
Every natural disaster makes Sean from Elmwood Park happy.
Or the guy next door. You know, if you were too crowded and the guy next door's house is gone, now you have some open space.
Yeah, so always finds the silver lining. We're going to have more details from on the ground when Evan Brown joins us at the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. We'll keep you updated, as obviously Mike Scott will, on what we know to be true about the impacts. Both in the Panhandle as well as the Carolinas. Robert in Oak Brook, here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, the Weather Channel has done it again, and I've seen this before in other hurricanes. They caught, and again, they didn't do anything, but there was four guys, one of them carrying a huge large screen TV, and this was during the hurricane.
Perhaps he had it on layaway.
Well, how do you know he wasn't saving it? Maybe, if he's married with four kids, the TV's his favorite thing in the world.
Could
so
be,
he was just saving
too.
His own TV.
Yeah, could be.
Let's not think
and then at 3 o'clock,
TVs and electronics
they showed another
first.
Guy, They showed another guy smoking a doob with another huge sack over his shoulder, and they even commented, there's the homeowner taking a look at the tree through his house. He wasn't the homeowner. He was heading away from the house.
He was looking for an opportunity. Well, how do you know it wasn't a Robusto cigar? See, you're very negative, Robert. For a guy that lives in Oak Brook, you're very negative.
Well, what, you know, what did you want the weather?
I grew up in the 70s, my friend. I know exactly what it was.
What, he's done time, this guy.
Sure.
Yeah. What do you want the Weather Channel reporters to do?
They have a phone. They can call the police.
Pounding a phone. All right. All right. Thanks for the call, Robert. That obviously calls to mind the Weather Channel gotcha moment from the last hurricane.
Oh, where they're faking the wind and the two guys are walking by smoking a cigarette? Yeah.
He might as well have had a big fan. I mean, it was Hollywood set.
It's all about ratings, baby.
You got to watch out where those extras set themselves up on set.
I think a hurricane is coming!
Oh, Lisa, there's no record of a hurricane ever hitting Springfield.
Yes, but the records only go back to 1978 when the Hall of Records was mysteriously blown away.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Okay, picking it up here. In Wilmington, North Carolina, right at the Intracoastal, and we're in one of these bands. This is about as nasty as it's been. We had some bands like this last night, and then the eyewall this morning. We were not on TV. It was a dark and raucous night at the hotel.
Did you ever?
I don't know.
Oh, boy. Those storm chasers live a life, don't they?
I'll tell you, did you see David Muir? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Did you watch any of it last night? What were you doing exactly? I was trying to talk to you about this. You have no idea what was going on.
I was giving a speech at Illinois State Rifle Association dinner in Joliet.
How'd that go?
I killed it as usual.
Yeah. I expect nothing less.
Right.
That would explain your look this morning. Anyway.
David Muir,
outside the hotel, he is broadcasting from a hotel with a canopy, okay? Not 7 minutes go by. He walks inside. The canopy blows down, destroys the two cars. I mean, there was some video last night, baby.
But nothing happened to his hair.
No, his hair is perfect.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I think it's that 10X, you know, in the 80s, when that gel look came back, there was this stuff called 10X, which was super glue for hair. I think he's got the last case of it. I thought it was the guys in Melrose Park that had the last case. Apparently, it's David Muir.
I stick with the dippy do. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that explains it.
That works for me. All right, are you excited about the ABC exclusive interview with First Lady Melania Trump that airs tomorrow evening? But of course, they're teasing it out over the last couple of days, including some snippets of the interview that were played on Good Morning America yesterday.
You got to argue with the accent. I love the accent. Makes me hungry. You know, I there's something about it. I want to kiss her, and I want her to cook something for me. It's got everything, the accent.
All right.
Eastern European, I love it.
I love that, you know, he's the ABC reporter. It doesn't matter who it is. They're all the same. Traveling with her in Egypt. And like the Sphinx that she visited, Melania Trump remains a mystery to the American people.
How about the hat? They made a big deal about the helmet?
Yeah.
How ridiculous. I mean, for God's sakes. No wonder the girl doesn't want to come out of the house.
Well, she read them a little book, a little children's book, and got everybody tamped down a little bit. And then she sat down, and as ABC points out, no questions were out of bounds. So it wasn't, you can't ask this, you can't talk about that. She was very open and took on all questions that were asked. Here's a couple of the, I assume they think, more interesting Q&A portions of this interview. One is asking Melania, the most surprising thing about being the first lady.
It's sad to see that organizations and foundations I want to partner with choose not to because of administration. And I feel they're choosing the politics over helping others.
And she got, he tried to kind of trap her by saying, well, give me an example of an organization. She's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to call out organizations. They know who they are. The interesting thing about Melania, I think she's actually pretty sharp, and I also think she's very restrained. She's got good political instincts, a little bit different than Trump, but she's got good political instincts in her own right with seeming to me demonstrating an understanding of her role in this you know, maelstrom that is D.C. politics and American politics.
She also has a leg up, as all Eastern Europeans do, who fled Soviet-style socialism along with the propaganda. They recognize it because they left it and they lived it. See, so the American socialist is too stupid to understand what's going on. So he pretends to be a Democrat. When she recognizes it on all fronts, and she's very aware of the propaganda, and she's very aware of the mission-orientated narrow vision where they're not going to stop, and they're going to use any weapon that is thrown their way or given to them. So that's why I do love her perspective on it, and I think she's very aware of it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You interested to hear what Melania has to say tomorrow night on ABC, in addition to what they've already teased out that she had to say. In addition to that comment, they also teased out at least a portion of her response to the Me Too movement. Implicit in the question, of course, is the Kavanaugh confirmation imbroglio. And here's what Melania said about the Me Too movement and supporting women.
I support the women, and they need to be heard. We need to support them. And, you know, also men, not just women.
Do you think men in the news that have been accused of sexual assault, sexual harassment, have been treated unfairly?
You need to have a really hard evidence that, you know, that if you're accused of something, show the evidence.
Some women might hear that and say, how could you say that, Mrs. Trump? You need to stand with women. What would you say?
I do stand with women, but we need to show the evidence. You cannot just say to somebody, I was, you know, sexually assaulted, and or you did that to me, or because sometimes the media goes too far, and the way they portray some stories, it's not correct. It's not right.
You know, Dan, I found it disgusting by the rush to regurgitate the talking point by Republicans, by the way, of with Kavanaugh and this Ford woman, and how she is
which talking point?
The whole thing where she's credible. That was the mantra from the moment this woman stopped talking. I found her credible, but when you concede that, you set yourself up to be dissected and you set yourself up to fail. I found her incredible. I didn't find her credible at all. I found her coached. For instance, let me just give you one tidbit of why I say this. The allegations itself I found pathetic. He was rubbing on me at 15 years, the whole nine yards. The whole allegation I thought was weak and ridiculous anyway. But moreover, when she said, I didn't know how to contact my senator. Do you remember that part when she said that?
She said she went to her local congresswoman. Yeah.
Well, do you know she works for Palo Alto University?
Right.
On the Facebook page of Palo Alto University, on the front page, you don't have to go far. Contact your senators, right on the front page of her very own university where she worked. So her entire position, I found to be nothing more than a well-coached assault. I didn't find her allegations credible at all. And for the entire conservative so-called media to just adopt that talking point of she was credible, but
that's first of all, the entirety of conservative media didn't adopt that position. That's clear. Secondly, I think you can say, as Susan Collins and others did, that it does sound like something happened to her. She had some trauma in her life, or she's reflecting back on her life, and she has convinced herself that some trauma happened to her. I don't know which it is, but I think you can say that. Look, most people are not that good of actors, right? Most people, I mean, some people can, you know, some people can pull it off. But most people can't. And so just in terms of trying to parse a story that has so many holes with a woman that seems so earnest about what she says happened to her, I mean, you can understand why people default to say, I think probably some kind of traumatic experience occurred in her life, but she certainly hasn't made out anything close to corroboration that Brett Kavanaugh had anything to do with it.
A traumatic experience has happened in everyone's life. What? In everyone's life. Justin has had his underwear pulled over his head by probably numerous football players. Should every football player bear the cost? I think not.
Now we're going to have to spend the rest of the morning walking Justin back off the ledge.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is Sean from Elmwood Park. President Trump getting involved in the issue of Chicago violence and policing. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, on Tuesday.
Finally found something for him to do, huh? Good for nothing that he is. Go ahead.
Following on Trump's pronouncements about Chicago, Sessions moved to block an agreement between the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois to, quote-unquote, reform the Chicago Police Department. So they're walking back the consent decree that was issued by Loretta Lynch and the Obama administration on the way out the door. Department of Justice under this administration doesn't have any interest in micromanaging local police departments from D.C. And they're moving to intervene and weigh in against a state and local version of a consent decree to micromanage Chicago police.
It's too bad they couldn't stop the funding for the Obama Library, but all right, I'll take what I can get.
Sessions announcing the Justice Department will file a statement of interest opposing the proposed consent decree. It's critical that Chicago get this right. Of course, this comes against the backdrop of the Van Dyke conviction. Chicago police. Two systems of justice in the city. We talk about how the police are treated as it pertains to the rule of law and the celebration of Van Dyke's conviction because, as Gator Bradley said, the first Chicago police officer convicted of murder in 50 years. And I understand that. There's certainly been instances of bad police conduct in general, but specifically in higher crime areas that are disproportionately minority in this segregated city of Chicago. No question. What about this story? We'll do some other compare and contrast that doesn't get nearly the profile. A 52-year-old woman, Michelle Cook is her name, stole a purse from under the chair of a woman dining at Pettorino's in the Loop. Ms. Cook had not been arrested in Chicago since 1995. Prior to that, she did a 3-year stint for forgery in 1991.
Oh, she's a catch.
Okay, so she's a low-level criminal. For stealing the purse, she's been sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. You know why?
Third time charm? No.
The purse belonged to a federal judge.
Oh, well, how dare you? If you could only get the girl next to her.
Joan Lefkoe's purse, to be specific. Remember, Joan Lefkoe is the one who had her husband murdered by a disgruntled defendant, I think, that appeared before her.
Huh. Yeah.
So she took Judge Lefkoe's purse, used the credit cards to make $1,159 in purchases at a nearby Target store. So on and so forth, not a master criminal. She's caught 4.5 years.
Part where you act shocked that we have a two-layered justice system of who you offend and who you steal from is different than just the average guy?
Well, the average guy, but let's compare the federal judge treatment to Chicago police treatment. From FOP's blog, last week, Matthew Ross made threats that if a Chicago police officer was not convicted of murder, meaning Van Dyke, the wives and the kids of officers in neighborhoods with a large population of officers would be attacked. He also threatened that, quote, every alderman's office should be burned to the ground.
Charmer.
This is a guy who has apparently a history of making threats on social media to attack police officers and burn down the offices of...
And who is this guy? I missed the beginning of who you said.
Matthew Ross, just some guy who likes to make threats of violence against police officers and even aldermen.
Did you invite Matthew Ross to the Elmhurst Cigar House today around 9:45? Let's see who the tough guy is. I'm just looking for a fight. That's me.
Ross was arrested. The attempt was made by detectives to have felony charges approved against Ross because, you know, he's threatening violence against police officers and aldermen.
Mm-hmm.
But Kim Fox's office refused. He was charged with two misdemeanors and released on bond.
Because he's a Democrat.
The FOP's second VP, Martin Preeb, a complainant in the case against Ross, sent a letter to federal prosecutors asking that they review the case and consider charging him. So making threats of violence, that's not kosher, particularly if you have a history of it.
See, but is he violent or is he one of these moron Democrats who open their mouth, but when push comes to shove and you're looking at him in the eye, they cower like girls?
Well, that's not the standard.
All right. Just checking.
Yeah. This is a story, too, from a friend of mine, just against this backdrop of 4.5 years, the sentencing. Armed carjacking just occurred in front of my condo. Girl sitting in her car on her phone. Three guys ripped her out of her car and took off. The cop told me to never sit in a car because it's happening all the time. This is Lincoln Park. Said if they catch the guy, he'll be on the street tomorrow. So that's an actual act of violence. And this is what cops are telling the average Joe, because this is what they're seeing from their interaction with Kim Fox's office. So
and you
do we want to talk about the Cook County State's Attorney's Office when it comes to the issue of endemic violent crime by a small percentage of Chicago residents that seem to be responsible for the preponderance, if not the majority, of said violent crime?
Do you realize that the public decency alone, how it's declined in the last 30 years is one thing, but the fact that you're seeing this now in neighborhoods where people have worked their whole life to afford the living, who have struggled, guys who said, you know, we talk about your fictional kids. My real daughter has toyed with the idea of going to DePaul over my dead body is my response to that. With the nonsense and the scum that surrounds it.
And
I don't want her within...
And the price tag.
I have offered her, just get out of the state. This is the problem that is going by with a whisper, where we're just talking about it here and there in spot news. The reality is, the city of Chicago is not safe. It's not safe.
How about the two Jewish guys that were murdered on Rogers Park?
For what? For walking their dog?
For being Jewish.
Exactly. And this is not... And, oh, we have... Double the patrol, triple. But you're not really addressing the issue because you're hiding the fact that it is not safe. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
So if you got a daughter or you got a wife and they're in this area, you have to worry constantly. And it's not the fault of the police. It's the fault of the system that has exported, for lack of better term, just the whole rob and ghetto mentality. It's terrible.
Well, maybe Brazil could offer us some instruction.
That's the only place that's worse.
I mean, you're right. Brazil has a murder rate about more than twice Chicago's. The candidate who won the first round of voting for Brazil's presidential election for the presidency, Bolsonaro, this is the same guy who was stabbed during the campaign.
What a rough year.
Just
he's
like
having.
First week of September, he was stabbed, had spent several weeks convalescing in a hospital. He has an idea for addressing the crime problem in Brazil.
What's that?
Give guns to good people. Well, if one of us, a civilian or soldier, is attacked, and if he fires 20 times at the assailant, he should be decorated and not have to go to court. I live in a dangerous neighborhood, said one woman. If someone breaks into my home, I want to be able to defend my children. This is in Rio de Janeiro. Bolsonaro, who is a former paratrooper, said, this is the way to lower the crime rate in a country that has more than 7 murders an hour. I think here we're about 3, a little over 3.
Mm-hmm.
Give good people guns. Good people with guns versus bad people.
Well, listen, I never needed government to tell me any of this. I mean, I'm gonna admit to you right now, as a proud scofflaw, I never waited for a license to conceal carry to carry. I was a kid that worked at the South Water Market at 14, and at 14, I got news for you, brother. You better have something other than just the fact you could handle yourself one on one. So, you know, I don't need government to give me the okay to defend my life. Well, let's take this guy, Phil. I want to eat his lunch.
I'll take it. I'll take it when I'm ready to take it.
I'm very aggravated at his comment.
This other story, too, I wanted to make note of because it goes to the question of proactive policing, of how the police are going to react in the wake of the Van Dyke conviction and just in the general antagonism towards police in the city. Mm-hmm. Three police officers attacked and locked inside an Inglewood home as they chased a woman who had spit in the face of one of the cops. They're chasing the woman who spit at them. Then another person hits one of the officers in the back of the head with a 2x4. Then they get locked inside the home, inside another home where they're, you know, this is almost like a scene from a movie.
It's like Cannonball Run.
From one home to the other, they get locked in that home, and then ultimately they get out of the home and they're treated and they're fine. I wonder, and the suspects are arrested and due in court. I wonder how Kim Fox's office will handle that one.
The lady's gonna, with the 2x4 may get some sort of a free lunch and a medal for civics, what do they call it, cops, that the Citizens Unite?
Phil in Deerfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Sean, anytime you want, we can meet, dude.
All right.
If you want to take me on, we can meet.
Okay, Phil.
I'll give you my number. No 114 problem,
West Park Avenue, Elmhurst. Yeah. Just go with your question.
Right. Everybody give an address.
Go with your question.
All right. All right.
Phone hero.
All right.
Here's the deal. My question is, and I get it. You guys are right on why people want to leave. I want to do the same thing. Okay. I did leave and I did come back.
Okay.
And I think I've talked to you about that, Dan. I did leave and I came back for some family reasons.
All right.
And I'm looking to do the same. Dan, I'm not sure I understand why Amy's tied. I'm not sure why you're still tied here. And I fear the same thing, guys. Look, I work at a law firm. I'm taking off Election Day and getting out of town because I'm scared to death of their reaction should the election not go their way. It's that goofy here.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. We're all on the same page.
Well,
I'm just curious why you're still here, Dan.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you. I mean, well, for
Dan, I'm sorry if it's personal.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, I talk about this all the time. So, for Amy, obviously she has two boys in high school, and so she's sort of tethered, or one boy in high school. Yeah, yeah. For me, it's a combination. I mean, I have family here, I have friends here. I've been here my entire life, so that's going on. What is it? I'm 46 years old, so that's 46 years, and so I have great affinity for the place I grew up. I have great affinity for the place I live now, Chicago. In so many respects, I love Chicago. It's a great city, and I feel. And so, I mean, part of it is all of that, those ties that bind in the life that you build in a place over four decades, number one. Number two is I don't like being pushed around. And so I, much like you don't, Phil, it's clear. And so I don't want to be pushed out of here by a bunch of Chicago crime families who've destroyed the state. They're the ones who leave. They're the ones who should leave because they're the ones who've destroyed this state. And I don't want to be pushed out by them. So I rather sort of put in the fight because I sort of think that's what life is about, putting in the fight best you can and the chips fall where they may. So that's sort of my instinct because of the life I've built and the relationships I have here and as well as the real resentment I have toward the political class in the state, including Surrender Republicans, who've allowed a great state to be decimated by politics.
What about the financial reasons of real estate and those people who can't leave?
Well, I know.
Because they're upside down either because their property's lost value.
But that's not me or you.
Sean, I'm in that business. I see that. I'm in the foreclosure work. I see that all the time.
Yeah.
That's one thing I want to ask these politicians.
Yeah.
Well, how do they feel that someone's getting foreclosed on because they put them in foreclosure, not the big bad bank? Not the big bad bank. The big bad bank is foreclosing on them, but it's the big bad elected official on both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely.
That put these poor people in that situation.
Absolutely.
And how many people are weeks away from?
Thanks for the call, Phil.
So you may not be in the position that Phil's talking about, where you're in foreclosure now, but you may very well be a hiccup away.
Well, of course you are. So, I mean, you know this as a real estate professional, so I need to tell you. But we talk about it all the time. I mean, when you're paying 4 and 5% of your home value and property taxes annually and the negative multiplier of that, and then you move from making money to perhaps retirement, living on a fixed income, but the property taxes don't adjust according to your income, They adjust according to the spending desires of the local and state political class. And so it's a matter of time. It is like Aetolian fever. You have to address it before you know you have it. By the time you know you have it, you're dead.
It's the undertow of failure. It's the undertow of political failure. And you can't swim back to shore. And that's the reality of it, because even if you can't afford to sell, let's say you can't afford it, just to put your home on the market, what is not being talked about is the average time on the market in 4 to 5 years has doubled.
And the thing is, this is so unifying. So people are always talking about the need for unity and find consensus. Unity and consensus exists on this issue. I've got all the data and the actual the stories to prove it. So then let's rally and revolt around this issue. We talked about Scottie Pippen's home in Highland Park. He listed it last year for, a little over 3.1. He took it off the market, just listed it again for like 2.3. He's willing to take a $700,000 bath, and that's before you consider that in the 13 years he's owned the home, he's paid $500,000 in property taxes. He's willing to take a $750,000 bath to get out from underneath his place in Highland Park. Now, Scottie Pippen can afford to take that hit. It doesn't mean he should be taking that hit.
Or that he likes it. He's very cheap.
And that's one point, and he's paying 1.8%. That's his property tax rate as a percentage of value, which is one of the lowest in the Chicago metro area. So you in Glendale Heights or Grays Lake, where you're paying 3.5%, 4.5%, 5% of property taxes as a percentage of home value in your $250,000 home, you know what that's doing? It's destroying everything that you have built or are trying to build.
But here's the thing. You're hyper-knowledgeable, so you get this. But fast forward 4 years from now, because that's the reality of what we will actually be living in. So 4 years, we got Humpty Dumpty Pritzker. He's in the office. He's raised the cost of everything. You've got, let's say, that other green energy con man, Sean Gaston. Caston wins, beats Roskam. So now there's a universal state push to increase Obamacare and increase the costs for every one of us. So now you've got that. You're 4 years in the future. The monetary policy of the country hasn't changed. Now you're depreciated even more. It is going to be so much worse than we anticipate. And Phil, who called up, he's going to be the only busy guy, because that foreclosure business, brother, that's going to be skyrocketing.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park.
Sound a little more excited, will you?
That's about all the excitement I can generate for that statement.
All right.
USA Today op-ed from one President Donald J. Trump, posted yesterday. Democrats' Medicare for All plan will demolish promises to seniors. Interesting, Trump takes up the issue of the government takeover of healthcare, the formal government takeover of healthcare, health insurance, as opposed to the informal takeover of health insurance under Obamacare. Dishonestly called Medicare for All, President Trump writes, the Democrat proposal would establish a government-run single-payer healthcare system that eliminates all private and employer-based healthcare plans and would cost an astonishing $32.6 trillion during its first 10 years. And let me tell you, that $32.6 trillion, which is not disputed at all by Bernie Sanders. He actually calls $32.6 trillion that price tag over 10 years. He calls that a pretty good deal.
You know,
but that's a low ball figure.
Well, it's nice. Here's the benefit of Trump. He'll call out, he'll write this op-ed, and he will at least open the door for us to recognize exactly what has the Democratic or Democrat Party become. And what the Democrat Party has become is the Soviet Union. And it's very important to realize this as you see the tumultuous nature of our reality that we live in with these threats and Hillary Clinton about the incivility to anybody who disagree with her.
There's a way to prevent the gulags. Just give them their congressional majorities, and then we can be civil again.
Well, listen, I got news for you. This is the Weather Underground has taken over the Democrat Party. These are the Weather Underground radicals.
We just saw
You've
them.
You've normalized these freaks and communists to where this is the argument we're having.
Well, again, we're scaling the Chicago model nationally, right? Because Bernadine Dorn was at the Van Dyke trial. I mean, think about that. I mean, whatever your position on Van Dyke, domestic terrorists like Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers, you know how we treat them? James Kilgore, you know how we treat them in Illinois?
They're Democrat royalty here.
Not just royalty, not just with titles. We give them sinecures in academia and pensions that are taxpayer financed, like Bill Ayers is enjoying right now.
A little something for the effort, as if he didn't inherit enough from his father. Right, another
hardly the point.
Mercedes Marxist that he is.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. That
but here's
is the
problem: is that it's the willful ignorance, and this is why I rally so hard with the Republicans. That if you do not stand for principles and fundamentals, it is not long before this is your reality. Because it was only 30 years ago that Democrats were talking more about financial conservatism, for lack of a better word, and responsibility than the Republicans do today. And in three decades, they have gone full-blown Soviets.
Well, here's what else the president writes in his USA Today op-ed. The truth is that the centrist Democratic Party is dead. The new Democrats are radical socialists who want to model America's economy after Venezuela. I don't think 500,000% inflation would be good for us. But
it could be a reality. You know, it's very funny, Dan, when you look at what have we increased our monetary base in comparison to what Venezuela has? I mean,
That's not soup to nuts. That's like apples and oranges.
Really?
That's oranges and apple orchards.
600% since 2009?
Come on.
It's a lot, brother.
You're not looking at the a $20 trillion economy.
Well, I mean,
come on. Get a grip.
We're going to talk about the implosion right now at the S&Ps? All right.
The Dow's down 800 points.
I was a little early on my bet to you, okay?
You're a little early.
Two weeks early.
A 20% correction?
I called 20% correction 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Yes.
And where are we now?
I don't know. Let's let the market open up. I wouldn't be praising today, baby. Do you realize that right now the market collapsed 800%? Now, 800 points, excuse me.
Great.
And I understand in a percentage aspect, it's not tremendous, and it's not. But the reality is, Dan, as I've been saying to you before, we have turned our face on the real economic principles and fundamentals.
Yeah, we've talked about the having to unwind from 10 years of quantitative easing of easy money, and the president's not so much enjoying the Fed trying to do that. But we understood we're in uncharted waters here. I mean, the kind of Black Friday doom and gloom is a little bit overwrought based on not just my view, but based on the view of a lot of people we talk to in the space. So I'm just not buying the end is near.
That I'm selling?
Doomsday
the buy
prepping.
Gold run, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You don't have to buy that. We'll ask Diamond and Silk in a little while.
But I am buying what President Trump is saying in this USA Today op-ed. Today's Democratic Party is for open border socialism. This radical agenda would destroy American prosperity. Under its vision, costs will spiral, taxes will skyrocket, Democrats will seek to slash budgets for seniors, Medicare, Social Security, defense. So he may not be the entitlement state structural reformer that some of us desire, but in terms of recognizing that if Democrats want to be what they are now, Democrat socialists, well, this is a fight that we want to take on. This is a conversation we want to have because it's not going to work out well for them because that's not where the country is. And so, you know, amidst everything that's going on, less than 4 weeks now from the midterms, I think it's a smart play and a proper play for the president to make against socialism. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And it's the perfect time after how Democrats have behaved over the last 3 weeks during the Kavanaugh saga to remind people and to continue to remind people day after day of who is under consideration for control of the legislative branch of the federal government.
And it should send a shiver down your spine at the idea that the Soviet Party, which is disguising themselves as Democrats, is really within a hair of winning. You know, it isn't. And if that happens, look at us in Illinois. We have but no other alternative than different versions of the same poor philosophies politically. And I pose that to you as, where are Illinois Republicans and where do their views really differ from Illinois Democrats?
Well, there's a difference between, unfortunately, the people that have been elevated to high positions and, number one, a lot of the legislators who are also in office in the House and the Senate, Republican caucuses, local officials. There's just a difference there. So there is a disconnect, I agree. And the Republican Party, such as it exists, has folded in with the Democrats for the better part of my lifetime. And this is why we have the worst governed state in the history of America. So can you get to critical mass in this kleptocracy to reform one party from the inside so you can reform the state from the inside? That's an open question, and we're not going to get the answer to it here on November 6th.
Yes, but I love Trump's article, and I love, you know, the majority of it. I just wanted it to end with the fact you can't beat socialism with a better fiscal policy run socialism. And that's the problem I see with the Republicans in general. The majority of them are not the liberty-orientated, market-driven capitalists that I wish they were. So, you know, I love the aspect that Trump is, I think he's doing this at the right time. But when you win with bad people, Illinois is the prime example of losing in slow motion. We have won with bad Republicans. Republicans that hold office, for the most part, are terrible. Terrible. Fiscal illiterates, willfully ignorant, and moreover, politically corrupt. So at what point, how does Illinois turn around? Well, the smart ones of us won't be here to see it. Because unless you want to go through this 50 years of correction you're going to need, you'll have the choices of Pritzker and Rauner. This is not a government.
I don't think so.
It's a Democratic runoff.
Well, this may be, but there's the possibility. Leadership is a funny thing. Bad leadership can make things a lot worse than you could have ever imagined, and good leadership can turn things around faster than you could have anticipated. And all you have to do is look at Indiana and what Mitch Daniels unleashed in the beginning part of this century to now. I mean, you know, in 8 years, he basically turned Indiana on a dime, literally, as though you would put dimes on the tires of state cars. And if you came back a week later and the dime was still there, that state car got sold. And the same thing you could say about Scott Walker and Republicans in Wisconsin who were elected in 2010. Look at the change in Wisconsin over the last 8 years. So the same thing can happen here, but that's what has to happen here. I mean, go back again. All you have to do is look at what happened with the Kavanaugh confirmation. The president of the United States, the country's chief executive, the government's chief executive, and the Senate majority leader, for all the legitimate criticisms of
Mitch
and the China people, right, uh-huh. For all that, leadership. Kavanaugh is not in the Supreme Court, but for the leadership of President Trump and Mitch McConnell. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so what we haven't had in Illinois, and we're still searching for, is that leadership in any important position within the Republican Party. And until we do, what you said is going to be correct.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember, too, about Kavanaugh is it's his own grit of why he's there as well.
Well, that's absolutely.
Had he backed off.
Absolutely.
Had he just shrunk. We'd be having a different conversation.
Candace and DuPage, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. You're doing a great job. Hey, Sean, I have to say I'm really disappointed in DeSantis down in Florida. I don't even see him. Where is he online? Where is he on Twitter? What is he doing? Who is running his campaign?
He's
afraid. The Romney people? He's got a terrible campaign. I'm honestly worried that he might lose because I don't see him anywhere on social media. And when I do hear him talking, it's this nice guy BS. He should be at war with this guy.
Well, that's why
educating the public on what he is. He's not even doing that.
That's why I said to you with this last topic about Kavanaugh and his grit. If you do not have that grit, when Republicans lose that grit, they turn into Illinois Republicans who hide in the corner and hope nobody notices them and tell you how vital it is each time there's an election, rather than proving how vital they are to a philosophy or to a principle.
Well, with
I say if they lose like that, Dan, get them out of the way.
Well, DeSantis is good, and I think DeSantis is going to win. And Candace is right, though. She has a good instinct on this. He did recently, I think, about in the last 2 weeks, he made a change as his campaign manager. Not to get too deep in the weeds in terms of electoral politics, but that's a big governor's race in Florida, obviously. Big Senate race there with Rick Scott against Bill Nelson, too. So DeSantis did make a change because his campaign coming out of the primary had been languishing, and I think you're going to see an uptick in performance the last 4 weeks of that campaign.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Sean from Homewood Park in for Amy J this morning. And the latest on the damage inflicted on the Panhandle and into the Carolinas by Hurricane Michael. So severe was the storm, 155 mile an hour winds. It almost blew David Muir away.
It's going to go. It's going to go.
We are in our same location, and I've got to tell you, a significant scare for the families who are inside this hotel with us. As you're looking out through the window, you can see the roof of the hotel that we had been standing out there. That was the shelter for a Category 4 hurricane. That has now come down on those SUVs that I was just telling you about earlier.
All right. So let's get some details now that it's been downgraded to a tropical storm and making its way to the Carolinas. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Eben Brown, who's a Fox News radio national correspondent. Eben, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
What can you tell us about, you know, what the state of affairs is in Florida at this point?
Well, along the Panhandle, they're not good. This has been an absolutely catastrophic hurricane, one that did not give forecasters and the general public a lot of lead time to mosey in their preparations. They had to hurry up and get out of the way pretty quickly. And so we hope that enough for everybody, really, as many people as possible, heeded those warnings, because we do know there are some people that did not evacuate. And I'm telling you, 13 feet of storm surge water and 155 mile an hour winds is not something that human beings usually survive. So we'll know more on that front later today, I assume. But you're talking about expansive devastation, the destruction of homes and buildings, destruction of the power grid. So really from Panama City down to Mexico Beach in the Florida Panhandle, you are looking at real utter devastation. In the surrounding areas, you're looking at pretty thorough devastation, and the storm is not over. The storm has moved on into Georgia. I believe it moved into Georgia, still is a major hurricane, into the central part of Georgia, which is really unheard of. The storm is still, I think, now on the Georgia-South Carolina line, now downgraded to a tropical storm. It's a much less intense storm, but it's still bringing damaging winds. Tropical storm force winds can still take the roof off a house. And that's something that as the storm moves into South Carolina and then North Carolina, the poor people who were affected by Florence are now going to get a kind of like a 1-2 punch from this storm. It's still going to dump some rain. It's going to have some powerful wind, and it's actually going to generate a storm surge on the North Carolina coast. There's a storm surge warning now for the Outer Banks.
Eben, I was watching. They had mobilized or had ready various electric companies from around the state of Florida and within the state of Florida. Do you know if they've started repairing on that, or is the, I understand that in Florida, in the Panhandle, the weather cleared up to where today they can actually get working on it. Do you have any estimate?
Yeah, the weather is much clearer in the Panhandle today. So if it is safe for crews to, those line crews to get around and start working on those power lines, they will. The only thing that holds them back is if roads are impassable. So those need to be cleared first. And before that happens, a survey needs to be taken so they know which roads are blocked. So that procedure does move as quickly as possible, but sometimes it's just not as quickly as people would like. If there's someone stuck in a home and the power is off and the air conditioning isn't running, because here in Florida in October it is still hot, the power won't come on fast enough for sure. And there are certainly priorities to make sure power is working for hospitals and nursing homes and things like that. So some people may not get their power back right away, and some people could be out for a few days or longer. That's sort of a reality of this. The line crews work as fast as they can, but if they can't reach the problem area, there's not much they can do.
Do you have a sense of what the federal state response has been, particularly when you have a storm, as you were describing, that's spread over so many states over a few days?
The response is actually pretty good. You know, Florida is well versed in this has a very good plan in terms of pre-positioning assets and people and supplies and whatnot. So, you know, we don't have to wait a week for supplies to get here. We don't have to wait a week for a line crew and power line trucks to get here from places as far away as Idaho. We've got them here already, and that's really the best thing you can do, is to have everything pre-positioned so you can get to work right away and not to have people either transverse the United States to get here or then try to transverse the state. I mean, you know, we're a very hard state here in Florida to get across. It's not easy because of the shape. So no reason to keep a bunch of line crews down in South Florida near Miami when the storm went to the panhandle. The way to prepare for that is to get them as far north as possible and leave them there where they're safe to get through the storm, and then have them come into the trouble area as soon as they can afterwards.
He is Fox News Radio national correspondent Eben Brown. Eben, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy this morning, and we're getting a real tutorial in civility from the left, not just in terms of conduct, but in rhetoric. Peter Beinart writing in The Atlantic earlier this week that civility is overrated. Hillary Clinton saying in an interview with Christiane Amanpour, now is not the time for civility. Until and unless we get congressional majorities, there will be no civility. But if you give us congressional majorities, then we can return to some patina of civility. And then yesterday, Eric Holder, former attorney general, of course, a presidential aspirant, his own self, in Georgia, campaigning for the Democratic candidate for governor there, he had this to say.
It is time for us as Democrats to be as tough as they are, to be as dedicated as they are, to be as committed as they are. Michelle always says, Michelle Obama, I love her, you know, she and my wife, like, really tight, which always scares me and Barack. But Michelle always says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No, no. When they go low, we kick them.
When they go low, we kick them. That's the truth of the left's position, as opposed to, I guess, the aspirational, phony, baloney, you know, fraudulent, unifying bromide from Michelle Obama about going high.
It's refreshing to me, though. I have to tell you the truth, because I have been saying for years that the Soviet Party has overtaken the Democrats, and they prove me right time and time again. So this is the reality of the weather underground, communists have taken over our political system. And that's what it is. And here's the other thing, Dan. Socialism is violent. It is steeped in force. This is its natural progression. This is where it leads. I mean, the good news is, you know, just because Michelle Obama's bigger than me doesn't mean I can't handle myself against her. So bring it on.
Yeah, I don't think you'd stand much of a chance.
Well, she's all roided up.
But here's the thing. Government is force. It is a good reminder that government is force. And so the socialist doesn't want to persuade anybody to do anything. The socialist wants to force you to do their bidding because they know better. And it's being laid bare by Eric Holder there and by Hillary Clinton, even really in her interview, is sort of a soft peddling form of the same thing that Eric Holder just said. And I tell you what, Americans don't like it. And that's not just me saying it. Interesting study out yesterday. A bunch of scholars looked at attitudes, political attitudes of Americans. 8,000 respondents, 31-hour interviews, 6 focus groups conducted over between the December of last year and September of this year. And here's what they find. On social media, the country seems to be divided into 2 camps, the woke and the resentful, right? Team woke and team resentment. People, old, white. Team woke is young, likely to be female, predominantly black, brown, or Asian. Roughly equal in number. They disagree vehemently as well as routinely about the catch-all known as political correctness. Well, that's not really the reality on the ground, according to this study. In fact, the study finds from the interviews and survey research, 1/4 of Americans are traditional or devoted conservative. 8% of Americans are progressive activists. 2/3 of Americans don't belong to either cohort, constitute what they're terming an exhausted majority. They share a sense of fatigue with our polarized national conversation, a willingness to be flexible in their viewpoints, and a lack of voice in the national conversation. Now, this isn't that surprising to me, but I think people lose a sense of proportion when only one story is being told over and over again, even if there's 2 perspectives on the story. And so the fact that a small minority drives the conversation for majority, well, that's not that surprising. Because that's the way movement occurs, a motivated minority. It's rarely a 50% plus one proposition.
But look what that motivated minority did. Do you realize that Obamacare is devastating the real people of America? Devastating. I mean, those of like myself who refuse to be subsidized, who just bear the cost. It's a devastating policy, and this was presented and done and really a move of tyranny unlike any the country has seen, where only Democrats impose this tyrannical yoke on us. And we can't shake it. And now what's happened,
well,
Dan,
we can't shake
is
it.
Republicans are running on Obamacare. That's what's happening.
No, I don't think so. I think what's happening, I think you were closer in the first part of what you said. John Cass writes in his piece about the PC culture. And, you know, when do the book burning parties start? Cass writes in the Tribune, I grew up with the belief that individual liberty was sacred. The tyranny of the majority must be resisted. The rule of mob was something to be feared. But those ideas have been scorched now, haven't they? Republicans seized the theme of Democrats pushing mob rule to help them in the November midterms. And the left and their handmaids in the Democratic media complex are mocking that notion as if leftist mobs are some cynical GOP fantasy. But mockery doesn't change reality. Mockery doesn't change reality. It's true. And again, it's 8% identify as those Democrat senators and bedwetters pounding on the doors of the Supreme Court. 8%, that's 8% of the nation. 3 times as many identify as conservatives.
And may I say the
and
least.
And then the vast majority, the 2/3, the exhausted majority, according to this survey, are, you know, kind of commonsensical and open-minded and willing to deal and flexible on some things. And that is not reflected at all in terms of what the D.C. press corps or their annexes like the Chicago press corps present.
But it's the tyranny of the minority that you must be fearful of. Because the 2/3 that you speak of, we're the victims because we're too busy with our lives, too busy earning. And in the meantime, before we realize what happened, we're already having our property stripped and our rights controlled.
Well, that's right.
So
that's right. But
who,
you know,
wins in the end?
Well, that's right.
The driven minority.
Well, that's right. Well, that's what I said. Minorities are lead movements. But, you know, the kind of like, I was too busy working to, you know, pay attention and be a civic-minded American. You know, that doesn't really wash with me. You know, that's a little bit of cop-out rationalization. I'm too busy to pay attention to this representative republic. I'm too busy to concern myself with this gift that has been passed on to me from generations before. I'm not saying you're saying that, but I'm saying that you hear that excuse of I'm too busy, I got too much going on to worry about who my legislator is, who my congressman is, what's going on in D.C., what's going on in Springfield. Nonsense. Make the time.
I agree with you. In fact, I think we're too far down the road to look back. I think you're just going to, guys like me are going to have to wait for the implosion and try to pick up the pieces after. And I use our own state as the example. It's too far gone. So you have to position yourself in the smartest way possible.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about this study, just to point up real quick, progressive activists much more likely to be rich, highly educated, and white. They're nearly twice as likely as the average American to make more than 100 grand a year, nearly three times as likely to have a postgraduate degree. They're also significantly less diverse than the U.S. population. The population sample in the study was 12% African-American, whereas they only made up 3% of the category of quote-unquote progressives. So it's white, rich, entitled, overeducated liberals but that you're seeing in the Senate and you're seeing banging on the doors of the Supreme Court. They're the same people.
And not rich because they made it, rich because they won the loin lottery, like Pritzker. Never made a dollar, but he's rich.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J this morning. And have you been following the story of Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who disappeared after stopping by the Saudi embassy in Istanbul? And there's every reason to believe that
he gone.
The regime had him murdered.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they frown upon that talking back. They're not big on that.
Criticizing bin Salman, yeah.
Sure.
Not popular there.
Bunch of inbreds roaming around in, in sheets. They're a little touchy.
Okay. Chris Hayes, MSNBC, tweeted this. Chris Hayes,
Which one is that one again?
He's the dude that looks like Rachel Maddow.
Oh.
Except he wears glasses. Well, she does too sometimes.
Yeah.
He really looks like her when she wears glasses. Chris Hayes at MSNBC tweeted this. Would be nice to definitively rule out that the Saudis are paying the president massive bribes in exchange for tacit approval for murdering critics.
He's about 8 years late on that. He means Obama, right?
Well, he is the one who genuflected before the
with the bow,
the family. But Chris Hayes is throwing out an allegation and then, you know, disprove it. Throwing out an allegation that President Trump is conspiring with the Saudi royal family to have critics murdered. Khashoggi is a Virginia resident, right? And so I'm all for, you know, the calls for a human rights investigation and the calls potentially for sanctions if this is definitively proven that the Saudis murdered this guy. This is how unhinged the left is. When Hillary Clinton said yesterday about civility is off the table, boy, they meant it. They meant it because that's her network right there. When Eric Holder says, when they go low, we kick them. We don't need to be low to get kicked. We don't need to go low to be kicked. They kick us as a matter of course, regardless of our posture. It's remarkable. Remarkable. It's
because they can't run on the here's the thing. They can't run on the fundamentals of their philosophy because their philosophy is a lie. Is a
they
fraud.
Don't have a philosophy. They have
sure,
a feeling.
Socialism, right?
They have a feeling. Socialism, for these people, is sentimentality. Yeah. You know, these are not ideologues with a grand plan like Lenin or Marx. These are overeducated simpletons from Eastern Seaboard schools who feel things, thus they don't have to know anything. And what they mostly feel is empowered to make ridiculous, fact-free statements of the most disreputable kind, whether it's about Kavanaugh or about the President of the United States. I mean, he's implicating him in murdering a dissident journalist. What?
Well, he's an idiot.
Well, I know, but that's not, you know, to me, that's not acceptable. Wave Chris Hayes off as an idiot. I'm sorry. You know, this, by the way, this has, 16,000 likes and 4,600 retweets. I mean, you want to talk about, like, the poison, the debasement of political discourse of our civic culture and where it's coming from? Go back and read John Cass today, as I referenced last hour, about, you know, essentially saying, when do the book burning parties in the schoolyard begin? It's people like Chris Hayes. Good Lord. And oh, by the way, I got an idea how we can find out if Chris Hayes is right. Just ask the FBI, apparently. There was an underreported exchange between Rand Paul and FBI Director Christopher Wray, testifying before the Senate yesterday, about FBI and intelligence agency data collection programs. And Rand Paul, this is where he's at his best, I must say. Rand Paul pressing Christopher Wray about data collection on American citizens and using data collection to prosecute alleged domestic crimes. The problem, the civil liberties problem this presents with these programs going on, sans search warrants.
So we scoop up all your information. We listen to phone calls everywhere, including Angela Merkel, everybody. We listen to everybody's phone calls around the world. And so, but we tend to tolerate that, but we have the Constitution for those of us in the United States. So if you happen to catch someone talking on the phone, so for example, do you think that it's possible that the president's conversations with international leaders are in the FISA database?
I'm not sure there's anything I could speak to in this setting.
It's been reported in the Washington Post about 2 years ago. There were 1,500 times in which the president, this was when Obama was president, was minimized, meaning that, yes, you are gathering up so much information, you, the NSA, the intelligence community, that actually the president's conversations are gathered up in there. Do you think it's possible that Congress, members of Congress are in the FISA database if we talk to international leaders?
Well, Senator, I am quite confident that we are conducting ourselves in a manner consistent with the law and the Constitution and subject to extensive oversight. I don't know that I could speak to every hypothetical about whether or not there have been situations.
Do you think it's possible that journalists' conversations, if they're talking with international journalists overseas or if they mention that they're doing a story on el-Baghdadi or another terrorist name, do you think that there's a possibility that journalists' conversations are in the FISA database?
I can't speak to specific hypotheticals.
I think the answer is yes.
And yeah, so that's a telling exchange, and Christopher Wray just keeps repeating that the FBI is following the law and following the Constitution, and Rand Paul then explains to him in no uncertain terms what the problem and the concern is regarding the exchange they're having.
The concern of us who want more control over what you do and how you look at data is that, as Madison said, men are not angels. That's why we have the Constitution. That's why we ask you to get a warrant. The information you've gathered in the foreign database is not constitutional in the sense that it's gathered with no bar. There is no warrant. There is no constitutional manner to that matter, to that data. And yet you're going to then use it on domestic crime. That has been our complaint for years and years and years, that you should not be allowed to access that data without a warrant. Why? Because we don't want Peter Strzok and his girlfriend down there looking up Republican donors or conservative donors. We want there to be controls.
Exactly. You want there to be controls because men aren't angels, and 99% of FBI agents can be Joe Friday, and it just takes a few, as we saw at the senior leadership levels over the last year and a half, that are not, to bring the whole thing down, to delegitimize the agency, and to violate Americans' constitutional rights.
And you know what's scary, Dan? You don't see this because you have the imaginary boys.
Yeah.
I have the real girls.
Yeah.
Okay? And what you see in this modern post-9/11 America is that it's amazing to me how many people who are aware of what their privacy, what their liberty, what their rights are, and they're willing to give them away because they hear government, even in the face of the Strzoks and the girlfriend who could eat an apple through the fence, and in the face of these failed bureaucracies that you know now, this is what Trump proved that's beautiful. You see, these agencies are only housed, the upper echelon anyway, by bureaucrats, connected clout bureaucrats. So it's I don't see how guys like Rand Paul, because here, you picked up on this, but why isn't this on Fox? Why isn't this on CNN?
Well, a lot of people don't even understand what they're talking about, but here's the thing, and here's the problem. The problem is that people don't understand where rights originate. Our rights originate not from government, but from God, and they're enshrined in our founding documents written by men, but that's not their derivation. And if you don't understand that, if you don't understand that sort of fundamental distinction,
then, well, this is the source of my rights, the government. So, yes, there's some bad apples, but I have to, you know, immediately restore. We have to reform, and then I restore my faith in these fallible man-made agencies and institutions. And what Rand Paul is pointing up is what our founders point up is always restrain the power of the federal government. Be very careful where you allow government into the lives of citizens, because otherwise man's pension is for unrestrained pursuit of power over others, as is replete throughout the history of mankind. And guess what? You know, I know we think we're super civilized now because we drive fast cars and we fly on planes and we got the internet. But fundamentally, has mankind changed that much? Fundamentally,
watch Chicago News.
Are we that much more civilized, really?
Not at all. And here's the thing, too, Dan. When I was a kid, I'm a little older than you. When I was a kid, you know who worked for the government? The incompetent and the corrupt. That was it.
Well,
so now we're willing to turn over everything to these two.
But I mean, the idea that people don't say, on the one hand, I don't trust this agency, I don't trust that agency, I don't believe this politician, I don't believe that politician, I don't believe any politicians. So who should be in charge of my health insurance? Government. So who should structure my kids' education? Government. Who should do this and who should do that? Who should decide what wages I receive and what my employer has to do for me? The government, this omniscient government that I otherwise have no faith in individually, somehow I have faith in as a monolith. It's so fascinating. The inability to connect dots, I guess.
Stand by my incompetent and corrupt.
Well, no,
that's who houses government. Come on.
No,
you either got the clout to be somebody important, or you're too stupid to work in the private sector. You go to work for the post office, where, by the way, I had a nitwit come in who was a mail carrier in my cigar store and ask, is this the tailor? Yeah, dummy. It's the tailor. There's 10 of us smoking cigars in the background. That's who houses government. That's why you turn nothing over to these people.
Yeah,
phones.
Yeah, it's not. That's not. The men and women in government, public sector, markedly different than men and women in private sector. That's cheap. That's cheap demagoguery, and you're better than that, so stop it. Right. People who work in government, just regular people like anybody else, like in any other sector. The difference is the system.
And the love handles and the stains on their shirt.
The difference is system. I've worked in a lot of private sector environments, too. You think everybody there is a member of Mensa? No.
Well, no, of course not. But at least they're taking their shots on their own with no safety net.
System. It's a system issue. Not bottom line sensitive, other people's money, unchecked power. Systemic problems. It's not just personnel problems.
Who spends money more useless than the government? They love doing it. Private sector, if you do it, you're out of business. There's the difference.
Margo in Burr Ridge, and you just made my point for me.
Thank you.
Yeah, speaking of history, I once saw Brigitte Gabriel on a panel, and she was debating a young woman, a young Muslim woman in the audience who was saying, well, they're a minority, they need protection, how dare she attack this minority, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, and Brigitte Gabriel said, well, if you look at history, you know, less than 10% of the Russians were Bolsheviks in 1917. Yeah. The rest were irrelevant. In the 1930s, less than 10% of the Germans were Nazis. The rest were irrelevant. You know, in communist China, it became communist, less than 10% were Red Chinese. The rest irrelevant. So when godless people, you know, when people that have no morals and no ethics, which our country was designed for people that had a moral code and an ethic code, the Judeo-Christian code, when they decide they're going to be the movers and shakers, it is a scary thing. And less than 10% can do a lot. Think of all the people that died at the hands of those people.
Well, that's right. Thanks for the call, Margo. One friendly amendment, though, to that story is, yes, it's a small minority that were Nazis, that were communists. However, they were able to achieve was folding in all of the civic institutions and the personnel at the heads of those institutions in society. So this is that. That's what actually. So that 67%. That's the exhausted majority. If the exhausted majority goes with a virulent minority, they become the murderous supermajority, and that's what's happened in those totalitarian states. Totalitarianism in the form of fascism or communism doesn't come to pass without buy-in, acquiescence, silence from clergy, academia, business. So, an important part of the story of the rise of these totalitarian states.
Do you acknowledge the similarities of what you're speaking of in Europe and what's happening in America now? Do you recognize exactly what you're right. I'm not arguing with anything you said. I am merely saying to you, do you not see this happening as we speak?
We're on the cusp of Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia?
We're on the cusp of complete...
No.
We are socialist infused, and it is eating us, and we are submerged in the quicksand of its political power right now.
Look at us here
in Illinois.
We have fights on our hands, but I mean, we are not at the beer hall pooch stage.
When your choices are between the incompetent socialism of Rauner or the absolute despotism, incompetent socialism of Pritzker, you lost.
Yeah, temporarily. Holly and Hudson.
Boys, hey, let's get one thing straight. Most men aren't angels, but you two, you're angels.
Sure,
in my
exceptions.
Book.
Yes, uh-huh. Of course.
You are the two. Sean, sadly, I did not put any puts on the market. I think you might get your prediction correct here shortly.
I
want to talk about...
Not even close.
you can't admit it.
So,
I was right. It's just a little early, but go ahead.
You were off by a factor of 7. That constitutes right for Sean
from
Mount
Park. The
market
didn't even open yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right.
Hey, it's probably the first time anybody said you're a little early, Sean.
That's right.
Anyway, hey, I just wanted to talk about where people get information. Because if you would have walked into my house 15 years ago, we would have been watching Brian Williams at 5:30. And for half an hour, that's all we would have known about.
Stories from the Front with Brian Williams. Yeah,
is he the liar? Which one's the liar?
Yeah, he's the liar.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, he's the liar. But that was. But now, it's not just young people on Twitter. It is, I'm not on Facebook, but I get a lot of information from Twitter. And I love this echo chamber. And I think that this is empowering the right. I think people who thought they were in left field are finding groups of people, they're solidifying their, it's helpful to the Republican message, I think. And I'm just thrilled that it's an outlet that I can follow you on. I heard the Rand Paul thing yesterday. So I think where we're getting information now is very important.
That's the beauty.
Thanks,
and
Holly.
That's the saving grace, is that there is. And I think inherently the majority of us have a quest to be free. So do I think in the long run we win? Yes, okay. But I'm worried. Listen, brother, I'm 50. You know what my life expectancy is? There's a miracle I made it to this
52.
Age. 52. I look damn good, too. Anyway, the idea that I'm going to see a time where I was as free as I was when I was 30 is not realistic. It's not going to happen. It's going to be different versions of
that was your choice to get married.
Very good point. Nice hedge.
Thanks. But just the Stanford prison experiment. If you think this is about people in one sector versus people in another sector, and it's not a discussion about mankind and the power you entrust to your neighbor over your life, just read about or even watch the movie that was made about the Stanford.
Yeah, I don't have time
experiment.
For books. I need movies.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J. this morning, and Melania Trump sat down for an exclusive interview with ABC News following her around in Egypt and perhaps other places in Africa. I don't know what ABC News' schedule was, but Melania did grant a no-questions-barred interview, this is going to be aired tomorrow night. But, of course, to try and whip up interest in something other than Clinton Foundation Donor Zero, they have teased a couple of the Q&A sets between Melania and ABC. Melania asked what the most surprising thing about being First Lady has been.
It's sad to see that organizations and foundations I want to partner with choose not to because of administration. And I feel they choosing the politics over helping others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, you're too young. You don't understand. I was a Bullwinkle fan. I keep waiting for him to come out of the background. I love it. Love it.
Okay. It was interesting because she was pressed on, well, give me an example of one of those organizations that won't help you even though you have the same objective because of the politics. And she restrained. She's very restrained. I find her actually pretty shrewd politically in the sense of sort of knowing her position in this milieu of D.C. and American politics. And so she said, I'm not going to call anybody out. They know who they are. Also, of course, not surprisingly, asked about the Me Too movement and really against the backdrop of the Kavanaugh confirmation and whether or not she stands with women. You know, one of those banal questions only a D.C. journalist could ask.
I support the women, and they need to be heard. We need to support them. And, you know, also men, not just women.
Do you think men in the news that have been accused of sexual assault, sexual harassment, have been treated unfairly?
You need to have a really hard evidence that, you know, that if you're accused of something, show the evidence.
Some women might hear that and say, how could you say that, Mrs. Trump? You need to stand with women. What would you say?
I do stand with women, but we need to show the evidence. You cannot just say to somebody, I was, you know, sexually assaulted, and or you did that to me, or because sometimes the media goes too far, and the way they portray some stories, it's not correct. It's not right.
Yeah, and the way they don't portray other stories, examples of, I would say more than incivility on the left, that Minnesota teacher we talked about earlier in the week, Rosemount, Minnesota, who tweeted, so who's going to take one for the team and kill Kavanaugh?
Oh, it's a great, did she tweet that, really?
Grade school teacher. She was put on paid administrative leave.
Oh, well, you got to give her a pay.
She's now resigned. South Charlotte Middle School. On the marquee on their sign in front of the school, F. Kavanaugh on the marquee.
Oh, my word. And they spelled it out. They didn't just put F. Kavanaugh.
No, they spelled it out.
What
and
a disgrace.
Somebody caught a picture of it. The school retweets with this, the letters taken down, the F. Kavanaugh taken down. That's fake news. It wasn't there. Unfortunately, other people had seen it and taken pictures as well. And in fact, it was there. So the then fallback excuse, and potentially it's the case, was we left the sign unlocked and the letters were unlocked. And so somebody posted this, but it certainly wasn't the school or administrators who did it. But even if it wasn't the school or administrators, I mean, a culture that begets these reactions from adults, mm-hmm. I mean, including Eric Holder, including Hillary Clinton.
Starting to think they're right, though, Dan, because maybe we are too civilized. Maybe we should go in the school and grab the administrator by his hair and make him change it with his face.
You would fit in very well, apparently, at South Charlotte Middle School.
Now you can't leave.
All right. For more on the topic of civility, Melania's interview, her as a political asset for the president. We're pleased to be joined again by our friend David Drucker, who is a senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. David, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be here.
Why don't we start with Melania and just the decision at this time, 3.5 weeks out, to do this sort of open-ended, wide-ranging interview with ABC News and have the country hear from the First Lady?
Well, look, I think that Republicans believe they ended up on the right side of the Kavanaugh fight. And I think that they're looking at Senate races. They're looking at an increase in Republican interest in the election. And I think it's fair to say that this was not just an open and shut case politically for either side, but that means it wasn't an open and shut case for the Democratic Party. So I doubt that Melania Trump, the First Lady, was thinking all of these things when she sat for the interview. I think this was more about her and her first solo international trip and all of that. But look, I don't think anybody at the White House is going to be upset with what she had to say.
I have a question about your article. Top Republican groups split on how to save the House majority on your website, thewashingtonexaminer.com. I'm curious about this because I don't want to follow the path of the old establishment Republican. The problem is I'm seeing the minority who used to be called the Liberty Caucus capitulate to that old majority. Does someone like me have a chance that, in fact, the Republican Party will stop turning into the Democrat Party and stand for capitalism and principles, or am I just passé now?
I mean, you're kind of passé. Look, I think that I think that the look, I think that you know, the I think that the Republican Party continues to be populated by, you know, different factions of Republicans. You know, some are going to be Republicans on fiscal matters or national security matters or cultural issues. Some are going to be populist. Some are going to be sort of your old school small government, free trade capitalists. But, you know, look, I think right now there's just not that big of an appetite among Republicans for
principles,
really reducing the size and scope of government, except when it comes to regulatory reform and the kinds of regulations that impact various industries. I think there, what you've seen under Trump and you've seen in Congress is a support, is a lot of support to disentangle and to sort of untangle all of the regulations that had built up under Obama. But when it comes to reforming Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid, the real cost drivers in the government, and obviously, as you've seen with attitudes on trade and how involved the government should be in the economy in that regard, that's just not where the sort of power base of the party is.
Right. There's no seeming appetite outside of outgoing Speaker Paul Ryan to talk about structural reform and entitlements. But there does seem to be energy, and this is pointed up by the president's op-ed in USA Today, to oppose sort of the full-on Democrat socialism that's being proposed by the other side. And so he takes up the Medicare for All, $32 billion, probably a lowball estimate, a gambit by Bernie Sanders and the socialists to formally have the government take over the health insurance market. And the president's decision to write that op-ed and take up that issue seems to indicate that he and maybe congressional Republicans do want to have that conversation about some form of capitalism that the Republicans support versus the full-on socialism where the energy on the left resides.
So I don't actually think that's what's going on. I think this is more of a cultural argument. I think it's more of a political cultural argument. I mean, the argument that Republicans are making is that government control of the healthcare system, i.e. Medicare for All, would destroy Medicare as we know it, which is a form of socialist medicine. Now, it's not government control of the entire healthcare system, and people pay in over the course of their life so that they can use Medicare once they're retired or of retirement age. But it is a form of government involvement in medicine. It actually, because Medicare has become so big and such a big, it's a big driver of drug costs and doctors and what they charge and hospitals. And so the argument isn't let's reduce the amount of government involvement in healthcare. It's let's protect the part of government and involvement in healthcare that we all like, and not do the kind of thing we don't like. So it's sort of interesting. It could be a very effective political argument, by the way, but it's not quite the argument for a freer healthcare market beyond what we have now. It's just an argument not to muck up what everybody likes.
So in essence, what you're saying is the paradigm has shifted. So when I say that the Democrat Party has been taken over by the Soviets, by the Weather Underground, and the Republican Party has morphed into a hybrid Democrat Party, am I wrong?
Well, it depends on the issue. I would say this, that would, you know, lend some credence to your view, although I don't fully subscribe to it, is let's take Obamacare as an example. So Obamacare was a massive political failure for Democrats in 2010 and 2014. They lost over the course of Obama's presidency about 1,000 seats, and Obamacare had, you know, a lot to do with that. And yet, Obamacare has changed the conversation when it comes to what kind of health care Americans expect, because for the first time, what Obamacare did was make it illegal for an insurance company to make an economic decision and refuse coverage on the basis of pre-existing conditions. It made it illegal to install a lifetime cap, another form of a capitalist way of approaching how you provide insurance and the freedom for companies and individuals to form whatever contract they want. And now, even though Obamacare failed politically so much, Republicans are running around in every campaign, in every race, no matter how conservative, no matter how red, and promising that they support government protections for pre-existing conditions and lifetime caps.
That's right.
And so that what people expect out of healthcare is completely different and much more to the left than it was when Obama was elected.
All right. He is David Drucker, senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. David, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park, we talk so many stories that are less than redeeming, not particularly uplifting.
Got another one?
Well, I mean, think about like Colin Kaepernick trademarking his face and his hair. When we talk about athletes, we're always talking about kneeling, or we're talking about the likes of Colin Kaepernick or the lefties on ESPN or the hacks in sports journalism that want to be part of the D.C. press corps and be taken seriously. So I'd like to point out good stories as well, redeeming stories, examples that could be modeled by people who have found success in life and have a particular perch where they're influential. How about Kurt Warner, Hall of Fame football player?
Yeah. Wasn't he the guy that was the grocer and then he signed late in life? He became a quarterback. Am I thinking of the right one?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, yeah. That's about the extent of your sports knowledge, I understand. But yeah,
he pay attention.
Led the Rams to a Super Bowl championship and a decent guy, puts God first in his life. And they, the Warner family, and by the way, you should see the CBS report. His wife looks like Jane Child. From the 80s. It's this wild hairstyle. It's kind of cool. But anyway, he and his wife have a son with developmental disabilities, and he was aging out of the facilities that are available where they live. And so Kurt Warner and his wife took matters into their own hands for kids with developmental disabilities that grow up and age out of state systems where they can get some support. And then, you know, how do you care for people if with the disabilities when sometimes, you know, you personally, even as parents who love your children, can't?
Well,
winning a Super Bowl may seem like a crowning achievement, but to Kurt Warner and his wife, Brenda, it was just the beginning.
Now our goal is, okay, how do we continue to impact people?
Over the years, they've contributed millions to help those most in need. Their latest effort inspired by their oldest child, Zach, who's developmentally disabled and legally blind.
He was thriving in high school, and you're like, man, this is awesome. He's exceeding all expectations. And then all of a sudden he graduates from high school, and boom, everything stops.
It was sad to see that there aren't a lot of options, especially for the higher functioning people with disabilities.
The Warners found no place in Arizona where their adult son could live on his own. So they built one and called it Treasure House.
Does anyone else want potatoes?
It recently opened, not just for Zach, but five other residents, and plans to take in at least 20 more.
Here we pick up some of the twigs in these bushes.
We want all of our other kids to spread their wings and fly. Why doesn't that Zach deserve the opportunity to do the same?
Yeah. Treasure House also offers job training, but above all, a sense of community and independence.
Here's a place where they can grow and they can thrive and they can chase after their dreams. We believe it can be life-changing for thousands and thousands of families.
You think you could duplicate this all over the country?
We do.
You know, you've had tremendous success in your career. Where does this fit in?
People are going to forget that I won a Super Bowl, but they're never going to forget the kind of impact you have on them personally.
Love it. And we have examples of that here with places like Misericordia. I'm proud of being affiliated with Envision Unlimited in Chicago that has programming like this as well, facilities like this.
I think all of this should be privatized. It'll be more efficient. It'll be more it'll be more helpful to the people themselves, and I think it'll be more accessible.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. Sean from EP, Sean from Elmwood Park.
Don Lemon has been coined the dumbest man on television by the President of the United States. For those who disagree, listen to this.
Kanye West is what happens when Negroes don't read. And we have this now, and now Donald Trump is going to use it and pervert it, and he's going to have somebody who can stand with him and take pictures.
That's him laughing. It's important.
He's an attention whore like the president. He's all of a sudden now the model spokesperson. He's the token Negro of the Trump administration. This is ridiculous. No one should be taking Kanye West seriously. He's clearly has issues. He's already been hospitalized.
Boy, the long knives are out for Kanye West. Interesting.
Yeah.
So Kanye West is scheduled to have lunch with President Trump today, and he's bringing Jim Brown with him. Would Don Lemon like to say that Jim Brown is a Negro who doesn't read books?
I'd like to see that.
Does anybody want to laugh at Jim Brown? Is Jim Brown a serious person who has put the work in over decades to improve conditions for black families in this country? You know, it's interesting to hear the scoffing by these windblown teleprompter readers like Don Lemon. And then you hear the voice of experience, Jim Brown, who was interviewed on Fox a few weeks ago. We played it then, but I think in light of his visit to the White House and the focus on Kanye West, maybe hearing some reviews from Jim Brown about the plight of black Americans and black families.
Well, I'll tell you, the greatest thing about America is that we all have our opinions and our thoughts. Nobody is totally correct in everything that they do. I have access to the president, and anytime I have access to the president and he will listen to my thoughts, that's all I can ask of him. And that's what I do. So this president is accessible, and he's different. He's challenging, and he pays attention to what I say.
And Jim Brown went on, too, to talk a little bit about, the whole, what are you going to do, Mr. President, or any politician, for the black community, that dynamic, that paradigm that he sort of rejects. Well, not sort of.
So I don't blame him and what his office can produce. I look at what I can produce in the black community and the community at large, and all the individuals that I can influence that will work with us to make this a better country. So we should look at ourselves first before we look at the president.
Well, I am just appalled every time I hear a demand of a call for conformity by so-called black liberals who are really black fascists. And what Don Lemon and this panel doesn't like is that Kanye West is not conforming to their demanded scope of political views or the opinion of Donald Trump.
Look,
so they don't like that.
It's interesting. I don't think Kanye West should be put on a pedestal as somebody who necessarily has anything important to say. He's not the problem I think sometimes conservatives have, Republicans have, is to say anybody who is breaking from the orthodoxy of the left, who's black, we should just, embrace and elevate, and we shouldn't. And that goes even for those who are conservatives, like Candace Owens. Candace Owens, who had become a YouTube star, and she gets a job, and now she's on cable news. The people that should be elevated and whose scholarship should be listened to and read are the Shelby Steeles and the Thomas Sowells and the Walter Williams, all the people who laid the foundation for conservatism generally and for black empowerment and enfranchisement and opportunity globally. I'm not going to get into this false choice of, is Kanye West a great spokesman for Trumpism or Republicans or conservatives or black people? I'm not going to get into that. But the mockery coming from a Don Lemon and his trained SEALs on his CNN panels, that's where the focus should be, because to me it's the left exposing themselves for who they are yet again. And
if it were one of us, it
pretty.
Would be deemed racist. That well, is, you know, I have to say, to me, but I'm not black, that sounds awful racist to me. the entire dissertation.
For more on the lunch and the cultural import or lack thereof, I'm pleased to be joined by David Hersani, who is a writer for TheFederalist.com, nationally syndicated. His book, First Freedom, A Ride Through America's Enduring History with the Gun. David, thanks for joining us. We'll get to to your book, of course, but I just wanted to get your reaction to sort of the celebutante aspect of this administration, not different than the celebrity-infused Obama administration in terms of the existence of celebrity, but it's just occurs differently and it's received differently from the D.C. press corps.
Right. I mean, I'm almost always uninterested in what celebrities have to say about politics or ideology or things like that. But, I mean, it seems to me that presidents use that sort of power and obviously the entire sort of entertainment complex is, or most of it is liberal and activated. You know, they're activists now. So why shouldn't Republicans latch on to people who are truly, in a sense, brave? I mean, it's kind of brave to stand apart from all the people you work with and everyone around you who take positions and aren't, you know, in lockstep with everyone else. So I wouldn't take it too seriously, but I think obviously the reaction and the dismissiveness and sneering that these people do towards anyone who doesn't think like them is tells us a lot about who they are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just more, to me, exposure for the mob. And do you want to be part of this mob that silences or mocks those with whom they disagree? I think that's telling. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
Oh, okay. It's just switching to your book, First Freedom. I want to get to that. The title is really intriguing to me because it recalls to mind the formulation Charlton Heston used to offer all the time when he was the NRA's president, which is that without the Second Amendment, you don't have a First Amendment, all of those fundamental rights of thought and faith and speech. And so First Freedom, your book that dissects the history of the gun in American life, particularly in this season where if you're a conservative Republican, you're getting in a swing district, you're getting a lot of mails against you saying you're a toady of the NRA and that's supposed to be bad. So the thought for the title of the book and the importance of understanding the gun in American life in the context of our politics.
Right. And First Freedom. I use that formulation that the other rights don't exist. Obviously, in Lexington and Concord, those men were fighting to protect a cache of weapons. They weren't worried about, some other far-flung issue or whatnot. But more than that, I think also people don't understand that the right to defend yourself and your property, your family, yourself, is the key to all other rights in different ways. It goes back farther in Britain than the right to freedom of religion, certainly, and freedom of speech, even. You can't have a republic, you can't have America without people being able to protect themselves and their property. It's the most individual of rights, not relying on the state for protection, but yourself. So for all those reasons, and also I think the way you think about the Second Amendment, it's not to say that you can't have any rules or regulations to govern safety, but if you don't believe that people should have that right, it tells us a lot, I think, about your views of freedom in general.
You know, David, we're talking to you, and we're from, Chicago, Illinois, which has the most onerous gun rules and regulations, I think, among California and New York. We're right up there with them. And I've lived here for 50 years. Now, before, I'm licensed now. They came up, where they came into reality, where they made it kind of difficult for us to have the concealed carry and the firearm owner card. But I was talking about this earlier in the show. I practiced my right earlier. I consider it to be a constitutional carry. Isn't it that any law that inhibits me from doing that is really a violation of my unalienable right? I mean, are there not grounds to eliminate all of these rules and regulations based on my unalienable right to constantly protect myself?
I think so. I mean, I wrote the book because I think people don't understand the long history of this and how we got to this point where there's been a revisionism of history first and then legality second of what it means to be able to carry a gun or to protect oneself. So it wasn't until the 1930s that federal gun control laws even showed up, and then from then on, people kept revising history to make it seem like you would have to ask the state for permission to carry a gun, when the opposite is true. It limits the government from telling you you can't have one. So I think you are right, and I think that's why, one of the reasons, at least abortion being the other, why the left is so, you know, worked up and hysterical about the Supreme Court right now, because Heller was an important decision, and you know, he's going to most likely uphold that decision, so, or maybe even expand that freedom properly. So I think that those are all, you know, the reasons why we are where we are.
Well, and the other thing, too, this points up, and the timeliness of your book is, despite the McDonald and the Heller decisions, I mean, you have a former Supreme Court justice in John Paul Stevens recently, in the wake of the Parkland shooting, saying we should rescind the Second Amendment. So the idea that, you know, kind of settled law is settled law, not to the left, it isn't.
No, only abortion and gay marriage are settled. Everything else is up for grabs. And the Second Amendment, at least he's honest about a process in which you could get rid of the Second Amendment if you like. But right now it's part of the Constitution, and in many ways its history goes, you know, is deeper than any other of the rights we have. Not just, you know, not just as a matter of politics or war or even self-defense, but as a matter of survival, of commerce. There's a reason we have a very unique gun culture, and it's not just ideological. And I think if people understood that better, the debate would be perhaps elevated, though. I don't know. Maybe I'm just saying that. I'm skeptical that this debate will ever be elevated again.
Well, actually. I mean, you know, don't be so despondent. You know, you got to have hope. I mean, that's one of Lou Holtz's four things that everybody must have in their lives. You have to hope for something. So hope for elevated discourse. And it seems to me your book also addresses this saw of the left that you just mentioned, our culture, our gun culture. In Europe and other countries around the world, they don't have this incident of private gun ownership. They don't have the incidence of gun crime that we do in America. So we should be mirroring our culture after those cultures, where there is less private gun ownership and less gun violence. And you respond to that with the sort of backstory on how guns have preserved these important religious and economic and cultural institutions in this country that those other countries don't have either.
Right. I mean, you could take a super narrow view of history, and people like to do that and say, hey, Denmark has low gun, you know, there are no gun crimes in Denmark. Well, or in Germany, for instance, which is not a good example. But I think you need to take a broad look at history when you talk about self-defense and rights. I'm not saying that Americans are going to rise up against the government anytime soon, or should they. But history is a continuum, and there are many things going on, and guns aren't just about fighting tyranny, though that's part of it. It's about personal, you know, your personal property and life, and you shouldn't have to depend on the state all the time and all those things. Now, Europe has a very shady and history when it comes to individual rights, and that goes for guns as well. So there are some countries that have some gun culture, Switzerland and others, but generally no, because they don't have the traditions we have that were not just forged by ideology, but by our life, meaning, you know, people have been moving west from the beginning of first landing here. When the pilgrims land here, arrows started falling on their heads. They needed guns to defend themselves and to survive through hunting. So, and to protect themselves against the French and Spanish and others. So they immediately understood the necessity of that right and how important it was, and then it was just ingrained in our Constitution. I mean, I don't know that that happens. I don't know that any other constitution has that right.
Well, right, and I mean, you know, the Magna Carta notwithstanding, I mean, in Britain, no First Amendment protections. You know, there's a lot of people in prison for things they tweeted in the UK. So in terms of adopting the culture of the Western European countries, you know, be careful. Just exactly what you're adopting as proposed by the left. He is David Harsanyi. The book is First Freedom, A Ride Through America's Enduring History with the Gun, and you can always get his writings at thefederalist.com as well. David, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the book. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
asked you for a charger. You hooked your phone up to the charger, you selfish son.
Yeah, you reminded me I needed to charge my phone. Thank you for that. You wanted to make a point. Your daughter at Fenwick has gotten a question about sort of guns and totalitarianism, just following up on our conversation with Harsanyi.
Well, is it fair to compare the Nazi Holocaust on the Jews and the American government and the American Indian? I mean, think about what that question implies. You're saying that the American government committed a Holocaust on the American Indian is to rewrite history. And that's, see, I wanted to tell David,
well, you can ask
that
the,
should
you,
be the title of your next book.
Well, you can ask the question. Why not ask the question? Because it gets, because this is, you know, the left wants to, I mean, we saw this with this week with this Scott Kelly apologizing for quoting Winston Churchill because some leftist cranks, moonbats on Twitter said, Churchill was a racist and he committed war atrocities. I mean, there's lots of things to criticize about Churchill, but to be able to sum up Churchill as a racist who committed war atrocities, that doesn't quite cover it. So for an exercise where that you come from the leftist perspective, is it fair to compare the treatment of the Indians in America to the Holocaust in Germany?
No, it's not.
And Poland, the Nazi Holocaust. No, right. But that's fine to ask questions
well,
and then force you to present the case.
See, but you don't understand the ideology of the left is that the Indian was a utopia. See,
well,
their idea is we ruined America.
I know that.
They don't want to talk about the Comanches and the warring tribes and the viciousness from Indian to Indian or the viciousness from Indian to Pilgrim.
Right,
they want to forget all that.
So asking the question from the left's perspective that these are moral equivalents and then giving the opportunity and forcing students to contemplate that and present arguments, that's good.
Well, let's see what the kid
because gets. Your daughter probably will present an argument very different than a lot of other kids in class, and then you have a discussion about it, and we'll see who presents the most persuasive case.
Well, let's see what she gets. If she gets an F, my suspicion of a parochial school teaching a leftist ideology is affirmed.
No, your suspicion of your inadequacy in helping your daughter with your homework is confirmed, and you should leave it to your wife.
All right,
that's what would
I
be
did
confirmed.
The homework. All right, I'll confess.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park. And, why would Christine Blase Ford come forward? There's nothing in it for her. Why would anybody put themselves through this? Yesterday, Christina Blase Ford has been nominated for a University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Distinguished Alumna Award for speaking truth to power, quote unquote, by going public with the allegations against Supreme Court nominee, then now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. What Blase Ford did on September 27, 2008 was something that was extraordinary and how ordinary it was. She told the truth about a sexual assault she experienced when she was 15 years old at the hands of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, wrote North Carolina English professor Dr. Jennifer Ho in the letter nominating Ford for the Distinguished Alumna
Jennifer Ho.
Award.
What was her name?
Ho, H-O.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And what about the $1 million in the GoFundMe? Just a little tip, a little cherry on the sundae? Not to mention she is now touted as royalty among the social engineering frauds calling themselves Democrats?
The only Ford who deserves a Distinguished Alumnus Award is Phil, the great All-American basketball player. But this goes to something that Victor Davis Hanson said when we had him on the show about Ford, which I thought was a pretty good insight. You know, it's possible something happened to her. It's possible that she... also has reviewed her life at the age of 55, however old she is, 51.
You know, three.
Whatever.
Yeah.
She's not happy with where her life is. And so she goes back through her life and she thinks about things that happened to her and maybe this assault happened to her at some point. And she decides that
she needs a high-profile target to make this a meaningful moment in her life that she can leverage to improve her life in the present.
Well, that's possible, but it's also possible that she was institutionalized for singing I'm Henry VIII, I am, on a constant loop. I mean, anything's possible.
No, that's not possible because we would have the medical records for that.
Yeah,
that's
they
actually
wouldn't be...
not possible. But it's just, you know, that there is this notion, as Thoreau said, that the mass of men go to, the mass of men lives quiet lives of desperation. They go to the graves with the song still in their heart. And you just wonder if that's part of this. That, but you know, somebody is not happy with their lot in life, and so they seize an opportunity. I mean, I think it's just very difficult to predict why everybody does what they do. And, you know, we're often left scratching our heads at why people do things they do. The psychology of human beings, it's not always so black and white, so straightforward.
Well, you're going to hit me with Thoreau, and I'll just give you a little Billy Brown from the corner who said people lie because they want the attention. All right?
Okay.
There you go.
All right. And so when they go low,
we kick them.
We go where? Eric Holder building the case against civility that Hillary Clinton launched this week.
It is time for us as Democrats to be as tough as they are, to be as dedicated as they are, to be as committed as they are. Michelle always says, Michelle Obama, I love her, you know. She and my wife, like, really tight, which always scares me and Barack. But Michelle always says that, you know, when they go low, we go up. No, no. When they go low, we kick them.
I'm not going to have to pretend Michelle Obama is pretty again, am I?
Those are fighting words for our next guests, the First Ladies of Punditry. They got a movie coming out, Dummycrats, and it's they got a screening next week on the 15th. They are, get ready for it, Diamond and Silk, who join us now. Diamond and Silk, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right, so you've got this movie screening for Dummycrats on October 15th. Tell me about that first.
Oh, well, you know, the president is draining the swamp, so what we're doing is exposing the swamp and Dummycrats.
Mm-hmm.
We are showing the hypocrisy on the left, how the ones that's running around talking about we have to impeach 45, we go into their district and see what's going on in their district. We're giving you the truth with proof. We're not holding anything back.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving you the facts. And we're giving it to you straight from the gate. So go to DummyCratsTheMovie.com to get your tickets. It premieres in theaters October the 15th nationwide.
And that's DummyCratsTheMovie.com. And if you look at the name of this particular movie, it fits the Democrats perfectly. Because you got to be dumb to think it's okay to go around and terrorize other Americans.
That's right.
So this
that
is what
makes you a terrorist.
This is the question I have for you. I think that the reality of social engineering ends in calamity, and the results are what some of our communities are experiencing right now. For instance, I think that ghettos are government made. Okay, so I think that's very important. So I've watched, as Trump came on the scene, he wasn't my number one guy. I liked Ted Cruz, and then as he became the ultimate choice, I accepted that. But moreover, Donald Trump will be, hopefully he wins if they run another socialist against him. But eventually, he will not be the nominee and he will not be the president. My question is to you, are you recognizing the fact that social engineering on a whole has a specific purpose to control certain sections of our community? And is that what you're rejecting full out? So will your support
absolutely
of the Republicans live longer than Trump?
Wait a minute. Let's go back. Let's look at the party that does certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the Democratic Party as a whole. Let's look at back in the days. You mentioned the ghettos. Let's just look at what Lyndon B. Johnson said. We give enough to keep them quiet, but not enough to make a difference.
That's right.
Let's look at what the Democrats, the party of slavery, the party of KKK, the party of Jim Crow. Now let's look at today. We have the party of what, Antifa, the party that's pushing socialism so people can be oppressed and suppressed. Yes, the same type tactics are happening today, and I am very concerned about that. But what we need to do is we need to push people to the polls to me to vote Republican. Vote red, vote Republican. If not, we're not going to know our country.
That's
because,
right.
Like you said, what happens after 2024? Who runs next? And God forbid if a Democrat get in and something like a socialist Democrat get in. I mean, we're not going to have a country.
And so what do you think of where the Republicans are right now and how the president and Republicans are trying to generate continued enthusiasm for voting on November 6th by leveraging what we saw from Democrats during the Kavanaugh confirmation?
Well, listen, I think that the president is galvanizing the whole nation. No, really. Well, what we saw that what happened with Kavanaugh, people didn't like that. People felt uncomfortable. Let me tell you something, especially minorities. If you know what it feels like to be done injustly in this country, where somebody accused you of something that you didn't do.
And people spent time in jail for something they did not do.
Right. So you have a lot of people that was on Kavanaugh's side.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of people switching their party to Republican because they felt uncomfortable of the politics that were being played with somebody's life, somebody's livelihood, the character, the mere character assassination, how they took the Me Too movement, politicized it, and used it as a weapon to weaponize that against somebody. We have a constitution that protects us in this country.
That's right.
You are innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around. So the country is galvanized, intensified. We are going to be marching to the polls. They want to kick us. The only reason they want to kick us is because they don't have no talking points. They don't have no facts. We're giving it to you with facts. When we're right, we fight. When we fight with facts, they want to fight with their fists and violence. Keep it moving. We have to march to the polls. Vote red. Vote Republican. Because if not, America as we know it is dead.
And especially now that you see these Democrats going around acting like a terrorist group, terrorizing other Americans, you have to be out of your mind to vote for a party that don't give two cents about human life.
That's right.
Well, there's another way to get them to stop being so uncivil. And Hillary Clinton presented an option, a proposal. All you have to do is give them congressional majorities, and then they'll be civil again. So we could just do that.
Okay, but listen to me. So they want to take power. That's what I call a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call a dictator. This ain't no dictatorship around here. And Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton need to go somewhere and sit down. They don't hold no power, no clout, no weight. We're not paying them any attention. We don't plan to give them back power. We're planning a red tsunami is what we're planning in these midterms because people are tired of their antics and their rhetoric.
It's the same old.
The Democratic Party didn't come to the table for civil rights. They didn't come to the table for tax cuts. They don't come to the table for anything. And you think we want to give them power again?
What?
For them to take away our tax cuts? For them to send our jobs overseas? Remember, Obama said these jobs wasn't coming back. So he gave you a few food stamps and an Obama phone without minutes, okay? Listen, the jobs are back. People are thriving, and people want to continue to feel the success that's happening in this country. And you can't do it up under a Democrat,
that's
baby.
Right.
You're going to have to vote red. You're going to have to vote Republican.
All that's right. The diamond and silk I was waiting.
Now, here's the thing, ladies. I'm going to help you a little bit because your voices are bigger. There's two of you. You got the and the whole nine yards. So I'm going to help you a little bit. I don't think it's so much that Trump is galvanized as socialists have polarized. So here's my coin phrase of the day. The weather underground has taken over the Democrat Party. Now, you take that line and you run with it, and I'll let you know it's trademarked later, and you'll owe me a check, okay?
Like Kaepernick's face and hair.
Yeah,
yeah.
Diana
trademark.
Ross got that trademark. Wait till he gets hit with that bill.
All right, Diamond and Silk, on advice of counsel, I suggest you don't respond to anything that you just heard. So let me ask you this. Melania Trump, the first lady, sits down for this expansive interview with ABC News. It's going to be aired tomorrow night, but we've seen a couple of snippets with her talking about her time as first lady, talking about the Me Too movement. Melania Trump as a political asset, what's your take on her?
Well, listen, we love our first lady. She's beautiful. She's poised. Unlike other first ladies, you didn't have to remake her or make her over.
Remake.
So she has what it take. We know that she's over there in Africa doing what she do. We love the first lady.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I love the way she carry herself, and she make us all proud. She makes us proud. We love her.
Now, are you worried, because we've seen a number of op-eds this week in the New York Times, Alexis Grinnell talking about how white women are gender traitors. And that her stupid uterus still believes that women should be believed. And now with the Kavanaugh thing, women who are victims of sexual assault are no longer going to be believed. So there's a lot of hand-wringing on the left of what to tell their daughters. What would you tell people to tell their daughters?
Okay, first of all, I would tell people to tell their daughters, whenever a sexual assault happened to you, don't run to a senator, go to a police. That's the
and
first thing.
And don't wait 36 years to tell somebody.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
And if something significant happened in your life, you're going to remember the facts and key details mm-hmm. of it. If it was significant, if it bothered you, you will never forget certain aspects of it. Another thing, Dr. Ford, when she went up there with the disheveled hair and the baby talk and the body language, mm-hmm. her body language showed that it was all an act.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can see it. Remember, she's a psychologist. And I think that she did women a disservice because people that has truly and really been abused, that knows the facts and the details, look, they know it. You don't even know certain elements. You're telling me that this happened in a house. You ran out. It was nothing but you, your friends, and some boys in the house, but you left your friends there with some assaulters. You don't know how you got home. Sound like you was drunk. To me, now, that's my own personal opinion. But what I would tell daughters, if you are being abused by anyone, you go directly to the police.
Or
not
to
go to a senator. Not politicize this
that's
here
right.
to try to garner attention. Because she done made out with, what, close to $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
If not $1 million. And now they treat her like she's something special. But what about Kavanaugh? His legacy is ruined.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stitch on it.
She's
all because
right.
of what they did. They took that Me Too movement, politicized that, and they used it as a weapon to weaponize that against Kavanaugh, and that was wrong.
They are the first ladies of punditry, Diamond and Silk, the movie Dummycrats, movie screening October 15th. And where do they go to get information, Diamond and Silk?
Oh, go to DummyCratsTheMovie.com, DummyCratsTheMovie.com. You can get your tickets right there. It premieres October the 15th, theaters nationwide.
All right, the premiere October 15th, DummyCratsTheMovie.com. Diamond and Silk, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
And they joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Mm-hmm. Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.